Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
I think you got to learn from every experience. That student reporter at Duke, he asked, I didn't think it was that bad of a question. I think Coach K was kind of being a jerk, but I also think the point of going to college is to get an education. And if I'm that reporter, I think that was a great educational moment. You learn from that question. You learn that the guys that you're going to, the men and women that you're going to cover are not always going to be nice. Some of them are jerks. I learned that covering Tark. I learned it covering Bobby Knight. Daniel Popper covers the Chargers for The Athletic, does a great job. Popper, let's go back to your early time as a young journalist. Did you have a coach or a subject that you learned a lot from as a media member in learning to cover a big personality?
Yeah, absolutely. I have a story for you on exactly that point. So I was an MLB.com intern covering the Nationals, and I was working underneath a legendary reporter, Bill Ladson, Rocket Ladson. A no-nonsense guy. And earlier that day on the radio, Matt Williams, who was the manager of the Nationals at that point, sort of left the door open that, you know, Bryce Harper might get sent down to the minors. At that point, he was struggling. This was before his MVP season. And Bill Ladson told me, I'm not going to be in the press conference, so you got to ask him straight up if that's a possibility. So I'm 19 years old. I'm freaking out. I know what the response to the question is going to be. I asked Matt Williams the question, is it in the realm of possibility that you would send Bryce down to the minors to, you know, get him back on track? And he ripped into me. I mean, I've never been lambasted like that by a coach, by a player, by anyone in my entire career. And I, you know, red in the face, and I just took it. And then, you know, right after that, you know, you go onto the field. Anyone that's covered baseball knows, you leave the manager's press conference, you go out on the field to watch batting practice. Matt Williams comes up to me in the dugout knowing that he just crushed this young kid and said, listen, you know, I had to do it. That's my guy and I had to protect him, but it's nothing personal. You know, that was a learning moment for me, you know, partly because I realized in that moment that I was always going to ask the hard questions. I was always going to ask what was necessary. That's something that Bill taught me and I've carried through for the rest of my career. But also you have to be prepared that if you're going to ask a question like that, you know, managers, coaches are always going to stick up for their guys, and it's just sort of the nature of the business. So, I saw that Duke interview, the question he asked, I thought it was a fair question. But, you know, as a journalist, you have to be prepared that regardless of the question that you ask, you might get criticized, you might get crushed, you might get yelled at. It's just the nature of the job.
Let me ask you, do you think if a veteran, experienced reporter had asked the same question that Coach K does what he did, condescending, let me teach you about empathy, or does he just answer the damn question?
Oh, he answers the question, no doubt about it, which is why I think people were all up in arms. You know, the kid later tweeted that it was the first question he ever asked in a press conference. That's a hell of a way to start out your press conference career. Coaches are going to be, especially in a situation that Coach K is in right now when your team is struggling, they're just going to be, you know, a little bit ornery. That's just what it is. And, you know, the one thing I would say to that kid is, like, don't take it personally and never shy away from asking the questions that you think that are necessary. You know, when you ask a question that elicits that response, it means you're onto something. It means that you struck a nerve and that you're asking about something that's pertinent and important, because the coach wouldn't react that way otherwise.
It's so much better than, hey, coach, talk about this or talk about that.
My God,
I think we get a revealing look at Coach K there? Like, that was the most revealing moment I've seen from him in a year.
Absolutely. Because you realize that he's frustrated. You realize that things aren't going the way that he wants them to go. Otherwise, you know, if they were undefeated, he would have been like, well, you know, we're looking forward to the next chance to get back on the court, et cetera, et cetera. But I think it's an indication of sort of where he's at and how frustrated he is with his team. So I had no problem with it. You know, after I asked that question on the Nationals beat, there was this whole back and forth in the media on the radio about whether they should let interns ask questions. Like, there were a lot of people closer to the team that thought it was an unfair question. But the funny part was all of the established reporters on the beat said to me, listen, we all wanted to ask that question, but we didn't want to get that reaction. So the credit to you for asking the question that needed to be asked. So it's funny that you see those two kind of reactions. But, you know, that's a question that had to be asked. And it wasn't that crazy of a question. You know, it just the reaction was indicative of sort of where he is mentally, Coach K is mentally at this point.
Yeah, it's interesting that you brought up that Matt Williams story. I think it's great. It's telling. I also think, like you said something there about, you know, there are people who work for the team who didn't think it was fair. I love that you had the confidence and you had some people in that circle that were veteran reporters who were there to go, hey, kid, that was a good question. That was a legit question. Don't, because you don't work for the team. And I get a lot of people who over the years who have said, all right, you asked Chip Kelly, the questions you ask him are too pointed, or, you know, that you were too critical of Chip. I got an email this morning from a guy who said that Chip Kelly hasn't coached in Oregon. I don't know how long. And somebody's emailing me today saying I was too hard on Chip Kelly back in the day. And I'm like, it's not my job to be a PR arm for the team. It's not Daniel Popper's job to be PR for the Chargers. You're going to ask questions that the Chargers aren't going to like.
Absolutely. You know, the way I view the job, and this is something I sort of learned as I've gotten older, you know, you are there to hold these people accountable for the fan base, because they don't have any other way of keeping these people accountable, whether it's, you know, general managers, owners, coaches, players themselves. These people are getting paid a lot of money, and these fans are investing a lot of time and energy and money themselves into the team, and they deserve a level of accountability, and that's why we're here. So, you know, to shy away from those questions is to not do the job the way it's supposed to be done, in my opinion.
Daniel Popper with us of The Athletic. What was it like to cover a coaching change?
So it was actually my first time covering one. And, you see, you know, all these reports in the media when you're not covering a coaching change and you're not watching them as closely. But it's funny to see how information is sort of disseminated and how some things can be wrong and some things can be right, how certain reporters are you know, bidding on behalf of agents and others are you know, just, you know, trying to get certain messages across. You sort of see, you know, how the misinformation can spread, how certain organizations can try and, you know, try and hide their true intentions and that sort of thing. But it was definitely an interesting process. You know, you have sort of this idea of what the team is going to do, how they're going to approach it. You try and, you know, sift through the comments that are made publicly and try and figure out what's truth, what is, you know, smokescreen and that sort of thing. And then it's sort of once it all becomes public and they hire a coach, you sort of realize, okay, this is the stuff that was accurate and this is the stuff that wasn't. You know, I thought they were going to go offense. They went in a different direction. And so you're looking at it and saying, okay, you know, maybe, you know, how I thought the organization was going to approach it was a little bit different than they actually did. And then you start asking the questions of, you know, was it the right approach? And now you get to the point where it's like, okay, everyone has made up their mind about whether it was a good or a bad hire, but you really have no idea how any of this is going to work out until the product is on the field in the fall.
Yeah, and I think, you know, a lot of us looking at it from Justin Herbert's perspective, how should he feel about this? Did they get him enough help where you feel like the offense with, you know, Justin Herbert at quarterback is going to be okay?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously Justin's not going to feel this way just because this is not how he operates and not how he was brought up and it's not his makeup. But if I was in his position, I'd certainly be a little frustrated. I mean, considering, obviously, as you guys know, Oregon, the number of changes that he went through in terms of systems at Oregon to get in the league and then to have the year that you had and to be comfortable in a system and then all of a sudden have that ripped away and have to start from scratch, basically, that would lead to some frustration for me. But in his eyes, I'm sure he's saying, you know, I've done this before. I know I'm going to have plenty of time to learn the system, and I'm excited. You know, from a philosophical perspective, the Brandon Staley hire makes a lot of sense. And he's a guy that's going to put his players first. It's a player-centric philosophy. You know, and you go back to his time with the Rams last year. You know, he's asking Jalen Ramsey and Aaron Donald, what do you like to do? What do you like to do best? Where? How can I put you in the best position to succeed? And he genuinely listens to that feedback and then creates a system around what his players do best. You know, it is a true collaboration. He's not just saying that. You know, he's proven that, you know, in the places that he's coached in his career. And that's a great thing for Justin Herbert. And you know, Brandon Staley coached under Sean McVay. And the Sean McVay model of coaching and building a team is everything runs through the quarterback. The quarterback is the most important player on the team. And the path to success is making that guy as comfortable and as efficient as possible. That's great news for Justin Herbert. It means that this offense is going to be created around him and his skill set and what he does well. And that's going to put him in a position to succeed, hypothetically. And you know, we'll see if they actually follow up on all the words that they've said, you know, when we see this offense in training camp.
Daniel Popper covers the Chargers for The Athletic. Good follow on Twitter as well. Daniel, the growth that you saw in Justin Herbert, maybe from training camp or the first few weeks, first few games to the end of the year? I know he got a haircut. I know he got a whole bunch of yards and touchdowns. But what did you see sort of in the growth and maturity of him?
Yeah, you know, the one thing I did notice that, you know, he approaches leadership in a very specific way. And you know, it was how he was taught by his grandfather, Rich Schwab. It was how he was taught by his father, Mark Herbert, and all the people that he was around in Eugene all his life. You know, it's quiet and it's unassuming. And that can be misinterpreted as, you know, not strong enough leadership. But in his mind, it's about developing genuine relationships. He's going to be himself, and he's going to show you what he's going to do on the field. And he's going to say, listen, you can follow me or you can't, but if you follow me, I'm going to take you where you want to go. And guys gravitated towards that. And you saw it as they started winning games later in the year. You know, the amount of excitement that was exuded by his teammates after he was making these big plays late in games. I mean, think about that overtime win at the Raiders when he scored the QB sneak for the game winner. I mean, he's hugging his teammates. Everyone's jumping around and joyous. I mean, they believe in this guy. And that was, you know, months and months of cultivating relationships and just being genuine. And that was really impressive. And then in terms of just on the field, you know, he learned how to win. You know, he went through this adversity. He went through these periods of times where they were losing these close games, and he wasn't able to close out games in the four-minute offense or make the plays in the two-minute offense that he wanted to do. But during that stretch of four wins at the end of the season, I mean, he was making big-time throws in big situations late in games. And I think he realized that, you know, there's a certain level that you have to take yourself to win in the NFL. You know, you're going to be in a lot of these close games, and it's going to come down to one throw here and one throw there, and you got to make those throws. And it was impressive to see him, you know, start to make those plays late in games consistently, whereas earlier in the season, maybe he wasn't making those plays.
You know, I think he's an easy guy to root for. We've always seen questions and heard questions about his leadership abilities. He's not the most vocal, outspoken guy. We all saw that at Oregon, and I think you saw that this first year. But it looked to me that he had the respect of his teammates. Why do you think that he had that?
Well, he can throw the ball 70 yards down the field accurately. You know? I mean, in the NFL, guys aren't going to follow the rah-rah guy. You know, you can yell and you can scream and you can beat your chest. That's all fine and dandy. But if you can't make the throws, if you can't go out there and ball, then no one's going to follow you. But if you can, it doesn't matter how loud or boisterous you are. They're going to follow you. And I think that Justin was a perfect example of that. I mean, a kid can play. He can flat out play. And Keenan Allen doesn't care if you're jumping around and screaming and yelling. He cares if he can put it between the one and the three on a slant on third and three. And Justin was doing that time after time in big situations. And NFL players, if you can play, they'll follow you. And that's what happened with Justin Herbert this season.
Daniel Popper covers the Chargers for The Athletic. What's the next 12 months look like for this franchise?
Yeah, it's got to be, I mean, from a team-building perspective, it is getting more talent on the offensive line. I mean, you have the franchise quarterback. You've done the hard part. You've gotten the guy that's going to lead this franchise for the next decade or more. Now it's about protecting him. And it's about getting an offensive line that can have an efficient running game so that you can have some balance in the offense. And you don't have to, you know, rely on Herbert's arm entirely. And so it's going to be, you know, they're in a unique position. It's a weird year with the salary cap decreasing because of COVID-related revenue losses. The Chargers are in a position where they have some space. And there are teams that are going to be scrambling to get under the cap because no one really anticipated this happening, obviously. So, you know, there's going to be cap casualties. There are going to be veteran guys who in a normal season wouldn't have gotten cut, who are getting cut because teams need to get under the cap. And the Chargers are in a position to pounce on some of those guys. And so you could see a situation where they can really rebuild this offensive line in one off season between some free agent acquisitions and then getting, you know, a solid left tackle early in the draft at the 13th pick. That's the priority. You know, and then obviously, you know, getting this coaching staff together, getting your offensive system in place, you know, that's all going to happen over the ensuing months. You know, as these guys get in a room and figure out exactly, you know, exactly what they want to do. They know they want to build the offense around Justin Herbert. They have an idea of the concepts that they want to institute, but it's about getting that stuff down on paper, getting a playbook together, and getting that thing in the hands of Justin Herbert as early as possible so he can start, you know, crushing the playbook and learning the offense and mastering it. You know, that's something that he really talked about after the season. He wants to master the playbook. That was his priority going into this offseason. Now, obviously, the playbook is changing, but he's a very smart guy. He said, you know, he's going to have more time this offseason than he did last offseason, obviously, because he was preparing for the draft. Now he has the months of January in February and March and April, instead of preparing for the draft, he's going to be in the playbook, learning it and mastering it. And that's another priority, obviously, as they head into this offseason.
Daniel Popper, I appreciate you. You're great at what you do. Assist to Matt Williams, but thank you for making the time for us on this show.
No problem. Thanks for having me, John.
All right, there he is, Daniel Popper. Great stuff. Inside football, so to speak. Leave it here. Our big splash next. Every day on the show, we do the big splash. Today, no different.
This is the one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it. Where?
Down there.
Must be
the big splash. Brought to you by the Exergen Twice Daily Thermometer.
Super Bowl news. Chiefs, Le'Veon Bell, Sammy Watkins, Buccaneers, Antonio Brown, Antoine Winfield Jr., supposed to play in the Super Bowl. They're expected to be healthy. Antonio Brown's had a knee issue. Le'Veon Bell as well, knee issue. Watkins had a calf issue. Winfield Jr.'s ankle's been bothering him. But February 7th, they should be good to go. All four missed the conference championship game on Sunday. Super Bowl scheduled for February the 7th. The Chiefs about a field goal plus favorite in this game. Antonio Brown, by the way, led the Buccaneers in targets in the final 5 weeks of the regular season.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.